All right, we're talking to Bob Riley, who was a WTMA good guy. Exactly when, Bob?
I came to Charleston, I believe, in the latter part of 69. I was at the Dock Street Theater, I think, for about 6 months, and then we moved out to number one Radio Park on Orange Grove Road, where they were building new studios out there. John Trent was program director, and Jay Bond was the production director, and Booby Nash was there. He did 7 to Midnight. Ron Phelps did Midday, and I think Jay Bond did Midday, and I did Afternoon Drive 3 to 7, or maybe it was 3 to 8, I can't remember. It's been so long ago, but that was a fun time back then.
Were you excited to get out of the Dock Street Theater and go to the transmitter site?
Oh, yeah. Looking back on it, that was a big deal, because the equipment and everything up at the Dock Street Theater was just in terrible condition. It wasn't really a real nice place. But to look back on it now, it was kind of a historic type thing. I remember one time, right after I got there, a truck came into town, and it was in the wintertime, and there was snow on top of the truck. And we went down there and scraped some snow off and made some snowballs, and this kid came by on a bicycle. He was a newspaper guy, and we beat him with snowballs. He didn't know where they came from, and that was pretty funny. But we had a lot of good times back then.
Now, how long were you at WTMA?
I left TMA in 1971 to come to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and the reason I left was we had just converted WTMA-FM over to WPXI. And put in a Sonomag automation system, and I went with Jim Schulke's stereo radio production, that beautiful music format that was real popular then. Ted Turner had bought the station, and he had just bought WGOW up here in Chattanooga, and he was buying WLOM from Rock City. WLOM stood for Wonderful Lookout Mountain. So he sent me up here to put the FM station on the air and do the same thing in Chattanooga with the FM that we had just done in Charleston. And I'd worked with Ted Bell. Ted was promoted over to the FM when we separated the two. And he took it Beautiful Music. And at that time, I was really interested in FM. I saw the future of FM, and I was fascinated by the automation system and everything. So when Ted bought a station up here, I talked to Chuck Smith, who was a vice president then. He was the owner. But he was vice president for radio broadcasting with Turner. And I said, hey, man, when you get an FM somewhere, I want it. And they said, okay. So I came up here and put WYNQ on the air. We called it Wink. We changed it from LOM to WYNQ. Went from 30,000 watts to 100,000. And ran that for about 4 years. And then we switched it over to KZ106 and became the Wings of Rock and Roll. And we were the first rock FM in Chattanooga. I was still with Turner Communications until he sold it. But that's why I left Charleston. Otherwise, I would have never left Charleston. I love Charleston.
Where were you before you came to WTMA?
I was in Fayetteville, North Carolina, working at a station there in Spring Lake, Fayetteville, Fort Bragg area. The funny part about it was I had left Fayetteville, that was in 1965, I think, and joined the Navy. Back then we had the draft, and you didn't have a choice. You know, you either got drafted in the Army or you took a branch of service of your choice. So I took the Navy, and I was stationed in Charleston, South Carolina. And that was my first experience with WTMA. I heard it. We listened to it all the time on base, and I used to say to myself, man, I'd really like to work at that station. That's a cool station. Never knowing that a couple of years later I would be. So that was my first experience of listening to WTMA.
Let's go back to that time before you worked in radio and you listened to WTMA. As a listener, looking back, I guess, fondly on those days, what do you remember about the radio station from a listener's perspective?
It was exciting. They were always upbeat. They always had a lot of contests going on, a lot of audience participation. WTMA was part of Charleston. I mean, it was inseparable. Anything that went on in town, if you listened to WTMA, you knew about it. WTMA was always putting on rock concerts and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, they were really in with the younger crowd. As a matter of fact, when I got down there, one of my fondest memories is we used to do, during the summertime, concerts out on the Folly Beach Pier. And we'd bring in people like Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs and the Tams and Billy Joe Royal and all these acts. A lot of them were out of Atlanta and Southern rock stuff. But, man, we had some great times out there on the Folly Beach Pier.
So when you were at WTMA, you worked the afternoon shift pretty much the whole time?
Yeah, pretty much the whole time. Worked, I believe it was 3 to 7, and then we got off at 7, and just about everybody at the station also worked at the Scene, which was a nightclub in town, for extra money. I mean, it was just like a 4-year party down there. Of course, I wasn't married then, you know, and most of the guys weren't. John Trenton was. Just about everybody else was single, and so we had a good time.
What was John Trenton like to work for?
John Trenton was probably, well, not probably, I would say without a doubt, the most talented and best program director I've ever worked for.
Why do you say that?
He was just innovative. He had a lot of good ideas, and we did a lot of fun things. I learned a lot of radio from John Trenton. I ended up being production director there before I left. He taught me a lot about music and scheduling music, and it was just one big happy family. We'd get together and cook out, and I remember Bill Dudley had a boat, a big old runabout.
Bill Dudley was an engineer then, right?
Yeah, Bill Dudley was the engineer, and John was program director. On the weekends, we used to load that sucker down with beer, and we'd go out on the Charleston Harbor at night and listen to Rod McEwen tapes, you know, with the girls and stuff. I mean, it was just, we were always doing things together, you know, either as a station or even not as a station, you know, just as friends. We were all friends, and we were always having a good time going out and sneak out to Fort Sumter at night after the park closed out there. It was an exciting time. Some memories that I'll never forget. Jerry Smith was my roommate at the time, and we shared a trailer. I mean, an old beat-up trailer way out on Ashley Phosphate Road out towards Goose Creek. Man, that was a piece of junk. And Jerry went on to do bigger and better things, too. And Bill Dudley, of course, I think he ended up owning WNCG in North Charleston and the FM there.
How about Boobie Nash? I guess he was the night guy that came on after you at 7?
Yeah, Boobie was probably one of the most talented guys I ever met in radio. He could do all kinds of voices. He had a great, huge following down there. Everybody knew Boobie Nash. Yeah, I liked the Uncle Boob. Got along real good. But he was a wild one at the time. And I remember he had a toupee. And sometimes he'd come stumbling in late at night, you know, after having a good time, and his toupee would be sideways and everything. But he was funny as hell. I always liked Boob. I never would have thought he would end up being a minister.
How about some of the other folks you work with that you haven't mentioned? Anybody else?
Let's see. Jay Bond was real good. I understand Greeny Bob died.
Now, Greeny Bob, that was Bob Green?
Bob Green. We called him Greeny Bob. He could get more out of a full-track production studio than anybody I've ever seen in my life. That was back in the days of the, you know, cut and tape. And he was a heck of a production man. Learned a lot of production from him and Jay Bond both. It was pretty wild. Got to meet a lot of nice people. Didn't ever get to meet George Wilson. He was gone by the time I got there. When I came up to Chattanooga and we were turning WGOW around and everything, George Wilson sent down his right-hand man at the time. His name was Tex Meyer. And I did get to work with Tex, and Tex was real good, too. And he had been trained under George Wilson, so picked up a lot of good stuff from them, too. So it was good enough to keep me in radio all these years.
Sound like you still love it.
Oh, yeah, I'm still doing it. It's a little differently now. I'm a manager of an educational station at a college. It's a good hard-rocking radio station. We've got students that are working every radio station in town, so we're still cranking out the announcers.
So how long have you been there?
I put this station on the air in 1980, so we're coming up on our 25th anniversary here. And I ended up being the manager, the engineer, and everything else. So I built this one, put it on the air at 250 watts, and now we're 11,000. So we've made a little bit of progress over the years. Between Jerry Smith and Harold Kramer and Bill Dudley, and back in those days, you just about had to do a little bit of everything. Some of that equipment in there, you know, was old tube type, and if the engineer wasn't around and the tube went out in the console, well, hell, you just replaced it, you know, and went on about your business. So, like I said, those were the days when you learned radio. You just didn't do one thing. You did a multitude of different things, and it made the job fun.
What do you think WTMA at that time meant to Charleston?
It was the heartbeat of the young people in the community. I can remember going out anytime we did a remote or anytime we played basketball games, you know, to raise money for charity and everything, we'd pack the house. And it was almost more than my little ego could stand back then. You know, I mean, it was almost like being a celebrity. We had a pretty good reputation for news also. I think Frank Campbell was newsman there, and there was a couple other newsmen.
Did you work there with Bill Sharp and Franco Hunt?
Franco Hunt, I did. Bill Sharp, maybe. Like I said, it's
a long time ago.
It's a long time ago, and there was a lot of people that came and went.
Did you find that most people that left WTMA went on to bigger and better things?
Oh, they all did, as far as I know. A lot of them went down to WAPE in Jacksonville, and some of them went down to SGA in Savannah, and had some, I think, that went up to WKIX in Raleigh and up to Myrtle Beach and Wilmington. Most of them went to either bigger markets or comparable markets.
Do you keep in contact with any of your fellow WTMA brethren?
Haven't in a long, long time. When the station got sold, I lost track. I understand John Trenton had an accident, was in pretty bad shape. And Ron Phelps had gone to work for RCA Records in Atlanta, and he died of a cocaine overdose, I believe. don't know, we just, over the years, we lost track. I went through a bad bout with esophageal cancer and almost didn't make it.
Did that bother you in the least, going from top 40 to, like, doing elevator music?
No, I think by that time, I was interested enough in radio. And one of the things that I remember John Fenton telling me was that as you get older, if you're going to stay in this business, you need to move into management, because there's always going to be somebody a little bit younger and a little bit better than you coming up behind you who's going to eat your lunch. And I took that to heart. I'd had my run. I pulled good numbers in the afternoons the whole time I was there. But radio was my life. It really was. And I was real interested in engineering, and I was real interested in the management part of it. At that time, it didn't really matter to me so much what kind of music we played. I was just really interested in FM and FM stereo. The numbers that Jim Schulke was pulling with his syndicated stereo radio productions were just, you know, believe it or not, some beautiful music stations were killing some rock stations then. And so I thought, well, man, this is cool. This is the future of radio.
Now, I don't know too much about beautiful music, but was Schulke the originator of it?
Yeah, pretty much.
I know Bonneville was in it, and some of the other syndicators were in it, too. TM Productions had a service.
Yeah, but I think Bonneville and TM sort of copied what Jim Schulke was doing. He's the one that laid out the 15-minute music blocks, and he's the one that laid out the tempo of the block, where, you know, it'd start up beat, work its way down, and then come back up again. And he always tried to end each song on the same note that the next song started on. And, I mean, he just had this flow to it. He had worked out this formula for beautiful music, and it brought it out of the elevator age into much more of a foreground-type format. But they did things with the audio that later on turned against them. The salespeople from other formats would use against you. You know, we never used any background music behind the commercials, and I think the commercials were always supposed to be so many dB lower than the music. Well, once that word got out and the salespeople started using it against us, that kind of did away with the format. For about 5 years, that was a really hot format in radio. It was my opportunity to move into management of the station. I got to come up here, take a brand new station, put it on the air, build new studios, up the power. You know, I just gotten married, and I said, well, I can't be a jock all my life. If I'm going to stay in this business, I need to learn the management side of it. I had a good time because at that time, Ted Turner was real involved in it, and I got to know Ted pretty good, and we went out and partied some. And, you know, I learned a lot from Ted Turner, too, so I had some good teachers back then. When Ted bought it, Ted didn't own hardly anything. His dad had committed suicide. He had the billboard company, and it was about bankrupt, and that was it. There was no CNN, there was no television or anything. His first thing was he bought WTMA, which Chuck Smith owned, and also WMBR in Jacksonville, Florida. Chuck owned WMBR AM and FM in Jacksonville and WTMA AM and FM in Charleston. And then he bought WGOW. And then he decided to get into television. And he did with television in Atlanta what he was doing with radio. It was actually the first MTV was TCG in Atlanta before it was TBS. He played rock and roll music videos on that. I remember he came up and told us right after he had bought the Atlanta Braves, he had changed TCG to TBS. He was going to put it on the satellite, and right after he did that, then he came up and was talking about this new news service he was going to put on satellite. And I remember he called a meeting up there, and he said, boys, he says, I hate to do this to you, but you guys don't bill enough to buy baseballs, so I'm getting rid of you. And that's the way Ted was. I mean, just... And so the next thing you know, we're out. And so I stayed there for a while after the new owners took over. And I was going to college out here, and they decided they wanted a radio station out here. So I helped them get one. Then they needed somebody to build it, so I built it. Then they needed somebody to run it, and I saw the writing on the wall after Ted sold it. I said, well, might as well come out there and run that station because they're going to bring in their own people here. And so I've been here ever since.
What about Ted Turner? Was he really actively involved in the radio stations, or was it just something he owned?
No, he was actively involved for about 2 years. He had plans of a whole chain of stations. Then he got into television, and Ted, he would get interested in stuff, and he'd have his finger in there and just going, you know, 100%, and then something else would attract his interest, and he'd be gone. That's the way Ted operated. And he always had something going, always had bigger, better ideas. And I guess that's what it takes to make a success.
Did he sell WTMA before he sold GOW, or sold them all at the same time?
I think Chuck Smith got TMA back. I think Chuck was sorry he ever sold to Ted Turner. I don't know what went down then, but I think there were some promises made that weren't lived up to, and I think Chuck ended up being kind of bitter over it. best I could tell. Chuck, even though he wasn't an owner anymore, he was vice president of the radio division. Chuck used to come up here a lot, and so did Bill Dudley, who was the engineer. He ended up being kind of like the chain engineer. Chuck made mention of the fact several times that he wasn't happy with the situation. It wasn't too long after that, I believe, Chuck got the station back. Ted bailed out of radio and went into television full time. And you know, Chuck owned the construction permit for Channel 4 television there in town.
That's what I hear.
WCIV. And he sold that just before I got there. And I believe that's where he got the money to make the improvements and move out to Orange Grove Road. I remember one time I got in big trouble. He had a couple of daughters. I was told when I first got there not to let anybody in the studio on the weekends. And his daughter came home from college and, you know, come bouncing down the hall, and I threw him out, you know, and she went home and told her daddy. And next Monday I got, you know, well, that was my daughter. And I said, well, I didn't know, you know. I was told, you know, that if anybody got caught in the studio, you know, my ass was grass. So I threw him out of there.
He should have been happy about that.
Yeah.
Your fallen direction.
Yeah. He didn't get too mad. Chuck and I always got along real good. He just said, well, next time, you know, it's my daughter, let her in. I said, okay, whatever.
There's a link on the WTMA Memories website you might have seen, the use for a cart machine in the 21st century.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, my brother-in-law did that for me. I've got that in my office now.
Yeah. Well, the ones that we had before we got the Sonomags down there were the Collins ATC machines, and they had tubes in them. They were horrible. But, you know, the cart machine revolutionized radio. When I first started in radio, I used to run all the spots on 3-inch reels on a Maggie PT-10, and it had quarter horsepower rewind motor in there. And, but if you didn't get your fingers out of the way, you brought back some nubs.
That's well, right. I remember
those.
When
you hit rewind, that sucker, if it came off of that thing, it'd knock a hole in the wall. And I remember the first cart machine I got was a Spotmaster with the old lever.
Yep.
Ask Jerry Smith one day if he remembers hooking up for a remote start to one of them old cart machines with the, had the neon ready light and got the grounds reversed, and the first person to try to fire it off on the remote deck got 110.
Oh, man.
We're going to kill his ass. I remember they put in this thing, this button on the control board, that every time you told the time you're supposed to push the button, and it made this sound or noise. Every time I'd push that button, I could be looking at the damn clock and forget what time it was. I could not do it. I told them if they put one more damn button in the control room, I was out of there. But every time I'd hear that thing, I would be looking at it, get ready to say 9:20 and hit that button, and I couldn't say a word. It just blew my mind. We had another button in there. It was called Canyon Echo. Oh, God, we ran the reverb. I'd forgotten how bad reverb was. It was full of reverb. But I listened to the air check, and surprisingly, the quality is pretty good for that time period. Of course, that was with that old Westinghouse transmitter, too, that, man, you couldn't beat that thing. That transmitter had a sound of its own, just like we sounded like all the other Westinghouse stations, KYW and KDKA, WOWO in Fort Wayne. They all had that mellow sound,
mm-hmm.
And it came from that Westinghouse transmitter. I remember when we pulled that transmitter out and put the gates in, never sounded the same.
I've heard a lot of good stuff about Charles McCann, who was the engineer there probably after you had left.
Yeah, well, I met Charles in Chattanooga. Charles McCann, before he went down there, was up here. And he had put Channel 61 television on the air up here. And then he left, and it was funny because he ended up at TMA where I just left. So. But Charles, yeah, Charles was a genius engineer. He's a super-duper engineer. But, you know, there was something about that Westinghouse transmitter that made everything sound so big and full. It was bigger than life sounding. We always sounded like we were much bigger than the 5,000 watts that we were. When they put that Gates transmitter in there, it was like it turned into a tin box or something. It just didn't have any fullness anymore. But we also had the Westinghouse FM transmitter. It was just the 3-kilowatt driver for a bigger one that burned up and they never fixed. And then later on they put in a Gates FM transmitter and went 100,000 watts when they changed it over. But for a long time, you know, WTMA FM was just something that sat back over in the corner and simulcasted with the AM. And if it went off the air, you'd tell Mr. Kramer, who was the engineer before Bill Dudley got there, and he'd say, well, I'll get to it tomorrow, you know, whatever. You know, and if he fixed it, he fixed it. If he didn't, it didn't. It stayed down for a couple of days. FM back then wasn't that big a deal. We just kind of ran it as a public service. But when you listen to the FM, it sounded great, too.
Did you guys monitor off the FM in the control room? Did you have that option, or did you always monitor off the AM?
I believe we always monitored off the AM, but I'm not sure. When we got to Orange Grove Road location, then I think we monitored strictly right off the console, either before the limiters or after the limiters. But when we were in the Dock Street Theater, we off-aired monitored. And I believe it was the AM that we monitored down there. But I can tell you one thing. When we first moved down to Orange Grove Park, you know, the big tower set out in the middle of the Ashley River, and then they built the studios right there in the old transmitter building, and then there was a big long hallway that went up to the new building where the offices and salespeople were. The old control room used to sit right there between the FM and the AM transmitter and between the two towers. And you being from Charleston, you know, you get some good thunderstorms down there. And I have been in that control room when big balls of blue lightning would roll down the hallway. There would be some times in there that we'd just put on an album and just walk out of there until the thunderstorm, you know. Those relays and that big old Westinghouse transmitter, they'd sound like a shotgun when they go off. It'd scare the hell out of you. That's one of my memories. That and the snakes that used to get in there and get electrocuted. They'd climb up and get on those big modulation transformers behind the Westinghouse transmitter. And all of a sudden, you'd hear a big overload, and you go back there, and there'd be a snake with his head blown off. So you know where he had been. Oh, man, when we first moved out there, that place was still pretty wild. I believe there was an alligator out by the base of one of the towers one time, and it was a mess. When you first went down Orange Grove Road, I believe there was a subdivision or two. Then when you got back where we were, it was pretty much back in the marshy area. Wasn't a whole lot back there at the time. West of the Ashley used to be the place to be down there. That was a nice side of town from what I remember. I remember, you know, before you turned down Orange Grove Road, there was a Village Inn pizza parlor. We used to go up there for lunch all the time, drink a few beers. And by golly, we'd be nice and mellow by the time we got ready to do our air shift. You know, radio's been good to me. I mean, I'm not rich, but, you know, I ain't starving either. You know, and I've been in it. I started in radio in 1963, before the Beatles. So I was lucky. I got to ride out the heyday of radio and rock and roll radio.